Well, again, I do want to thank you for having us here today. I'm not sure who all makes the decisions on those coming, but I don't consider it a small thing to stand before you and share. I do have opportunity to speak at other churches. I'm always grateful. Again, it's not a small thing to just come up and be trusted with the things of the Lord. And so my one friend said to me, "Do you get nervous?" I said, "Sure." And I think that's a good thing whenever we are doing anything in front of a group or anything of very valuable importance. And sharing the things of the Lord are very important. So I thank you for that and appreciate that. So we're thinking about revival today, the God who revives. And as I was preparing for today, and I was looking at scriptures and looking at thoughts and those sort of things, that's the word that kept jumping out at me, revival, revival, revival. I do have somewhere in here a definition, as I like to look up words, even though we know what they mean, sometimes there are subtle nuances from the etymology, the history of them, that might be a little different than we've looked at. And some of the words that would make sense when we think of revival, I was at a memorial service last night for a friend's stepfather, and his mother-in-law came up to me and said, "I heard you're preaching at a revival." I said, "No, not really that. It's just preaching about revival, but a revival could happen." I think Peggy jumped in and said, "It might happen. We never know." That's my desire, is that revival will be stirring in all of us today. But some of the definitions, reestablishment, restoration, regeneration, those words ring in the Christian vocabulary, rejuvenation, stimulation. Good words to think about, reviving, being revived. A lot of times, as most of you know, I work primarily with men and women dealing with substance abuse issues. That's what I've been doing in my 17th year now, full time. But over the years, certainly, it's not surprising, many other things have come up with those same individuals, or others call and say, "Look, it's not an addiction, but there's something going on," and that's okay too, because it's whatever troubles us, whatever we're struggling with and dealing with. I certainly want to help with that, but also the rest of us as believers, as we grow and mature, need to have some measure of ability to help whatever it might be in someone's life, family, friends, acquaintances. And really what we're doing, and the word obviously that I want to leave you with today is revival. We're trying to stir a revival in our hearts, especially when we go through difficult times, but also stir it in the hearts and lives of others. I have to say, I don't always do that. I wish I did, but life is such that I'm not that good. But my desire and my goal as I go out for the day and pray before I embark upon the day, and I don't always say it this way, but I have, especially when we sing that song for a service or a gathering or whatever, is I think, "Lord, help me to stir revival in the hearts of others." That's really what the Christian life is of maturity. It contains guidance and teaching and all that sort of thing. But really, if the Spirit's not in it, we have another song by Robin Mark we sing called "Miracle in My Heart." And it says, "Lord, without your power, it's all just good intentions. It's all just good intentions, without his power, without the strength of the Holy Spirit." So we need to be clear on that. Well, I thought a lot about David and the legacy that he has left for his people and for us. Last night, as we were yesterday at the service, we knew the fellow who passed. Not really well, but he's come to some of our Star Us gatherings. He's come to our events, and I know the family. I've known them for 15 years. So by proxy, by knowing his relatives, I met him and talked with him some, but I didn't know much about him. And a number of people got up and shared the encouragement that he offered to them in the ways he did. And they shared some detail. His stepson shared a little bit about some of what he went through, the difficult things, which is appropriate, or not. I mean, when we gather, it's not all about all good. Sometimes we do talk about what we struggle with, or else how do we know which way to go sometimes? But that memorial service should not be laden with all they did wrong, even though he did a lot wrong. That's not what we gather for. We gather to try to use that as an opportunity to remember our loved one and to then share with others some hope in the Lord. Now, especially for him, because he was a believer, so his son, his stepson and others were able to share without wondering that he is with the Lord and that sort of thing. Well, sometimes we gather, you know, I come from the, you know, substance abuse area, so there's a lot of the recovery culture, and sadly, not all, but much of it is spending time lamenting the woes and sort of misery loves company. Now, in secular recovery, Christ isn't there. He's not invited by individuals, yes, but not by the grouping. So there is no hope. You really just try to draw hope from somebody maybe telling you something they did that made today better than yesterday. That's not a bad thing. But that's not going to carry someone. That's not going to really revive their hearts. And so David, we're just reading one verse particularly today, and then I'll highlight a few others. David in Psalm 138 says this, verse 7. He says, "Though I walk in the midst of trouble, you will revive me, the Lord. You will revive me. You will stretch forth your hand against the wrath of my enemies, and your right hand will save me." Now, we know pre-Pentecost, pre-New Testament Christianity, how can anybody be saved? You know, well, they were saved in their belief of the Christ who was to come and the prophecy of that one. So David was a man of God. We hear that. That's written. But yet he did a lot of wrong things. We know that if you know of David. So I don't think David was crying out for salvation in the sense of knowing the Lord. I think he knew the Lord. I think he was crying out for salvation from his troubles. And some writers believe this was right after his ascension as king. We don't know. But he says, "Though I walk in the midst of trouble." He doesn't say, "Since all that's behind me," he's right in the middle of it. Sometimes we're waiting, we're just sitting waiting for the trouble to go so then we can rejoice. But revival is learning to rejoice in the midst of those things. And that's, many of you know, that's not as easy as it sounds, but that's important and imperative, or else we'll get dragged under and may never recover from whatever it is. I've known people, sadly, over the years that never recovered from crisis and trauma for different reasons. If you know the story of his descendants, about 600 years roundabout later, just hopscotching through some of this, if you had time and wanted to do a study looking through Haggai and Ezra and Nehemiah, you'll see a little bit of this psalm lived out. So the Israelites were told in Jeremiah 29 that they were going to be sent to captivity in Babylon for 70 years. And we often hear the verse 11 in Jeremiah 29, "I know the plans I have for you, to prosper and to harm you, to give you a hope and a future," right? We've all heard that. It's often misquoted. You know, God, everything's for a reason. Well, you know, I guess. but here he's saying to these people that, right? He's just told him he's going to send him into captivity for 70 years. That doesn't seem to add up, does it? I would think, well, that doesn't make any sense. If you have a plan and a purpose, why am I going to be going through trouble and crisis and captivity? Well, as I thought about my friend yesterday, and as I thought about the Israelites, and I thought about us, I don't know that I'll leave a legacy. I don't even know if that'll come up. I might die and just get whisked away somewhere, but I hope that somebody or a couple of people have a life changed in part because of God having changed my life and then being able to share that. And that should be the hope for each of us. But the reality is we may never see the result of that. We might not. There's no guarantee that we'll see great victory throughout all the people around us to whom we minister. But trusting in him for revival is knowing that he'll do his work regardless and to do our part to stay true to what he's called us to have revival springing up in us and encouraging others. Ezra, if you read back through there, Zerubbabel and Ezra, they were the first two to help the Israelites get back to their homeland. We're going to send revival, bring them all back home, back to the place God intended for us to be. When man was created, he was intended to live with God in paradise. Man chose to sin, therefore man was put out of paradise. That's how we live this day. The Bible teaches us that through acceptance, belief, and faith and the Christ who came to repair that brokenness, when we receive him, when we answer the call of his pull, we are brought back into that place. Salvation begins at that moment, not when we die and go to heaven. New life, eternity, begins then. But yet I'm still on this earth. That doesn't make sense. I'm still in the midst of trouble. The writer says, but yet I rejoice. Yet I have revival. You revive me. And as we close today, we'll look at a few thoughts on maybe how that looks in practical terms. So Ezra went in. He established the temple in Jerusalem while the whole city was in ruins. It says, if you read, the city was burned. It was, stones were burned. It was totally demolished. And so the Jews are going back to this place that's a total disaster. And when we get saved, when people get saved, they often assume life is going to be now good. And then there's a phrase in recovery circles, life on life's terms. Suddenly you realize it didn't get any better. I'm just different. And people wonder why everybody around them isn't rejoicing and all, because it's still the world. But yet they can be strengthened and should be in it. Likewise us. Salvation comes. Things don't just get better, do they? In our hearts, they should and they can. In circumstances, do they don't. There's no sort of rhyme or reason to that, no guarantee. But Nehemiah came later, and he helped build the protective structure around them. But Ezra knew from God that first the heart needed to be changed. The temple is tantamount, is synonymous with the heart. The wall is a picture of our lifestyle. Got to change things, got to do things differently. I've lived it, I know it. You can't just change your behavior and change your surroundings and change all that. It doesn't work. Yeah, it'll work for a month or two or three, but eventually I crashed and burned again, back to the same old thing. And so we try, and I get that, try to help people with behavioral changes. We shouldn't ignore that entirely, but we need to know that really, unless revival is in their hearts, they're not really going to change. Again, maybe for a month, a year, some period of time. So we learned that, thinking about that. Ezra knew that. He got permission. He went in, restored the temple. And then, you know, it was 110 years total, I think, the three waves of, you know, it wasn't this quick, you know, hey, let's go back. Again, a lifetime. It was a lifetime, generations. And then they got back, and Nehemiah said, well, now we need to protect ourselves. So they rebuilt the wall in 51 days. That was a quick thing by the Lord's help. So the thought there in that story is David knew to ask God for revival. Ezra knew to ask God to help him provide revival, the heart of Jerusalem. So then when the people came, they were encouraged. They were revived. And then they worked on the protective measures around them. I was part of a missionary peer group online. A friend of mine invited me to join. It was about nine of us. We met once a month for 6 months. And it was on the, you know, the computer. One guy's in Scotland, one's in Puerto Rico and around. And we, you know, got to know each other, met for about 2.5 hours once a month and talked. And this one man, he's been a missionary for 50 plus years. He's retiring next spring, I think. He's in Scotland currently. He's from New England. And he said, I was looking for, you know, I'm thinking this is the kind of guy you want to talk to, guy that's been doing this for a long time, living the Christian life and trying to help others. And I said, and we were talking, and, you know, the way the structure was, each one would share something, and then everybody would give a little bit of feedback, that kind of thing. And he said, brother, what I can tell you is just keep trying to help people see the glory of God. And I thought, that's it? You know, these great nuggets of wisdom. But that was. We live to try to stir revival in the hearts of others. That's what God gives us the privilege of doing. We need to know it first, but that's what we're doing. We're not teaching people how to live, although we do teach them how to live. We're not trying to impart to them the rules and regulations of Christian life, although we certainly share with them things to do, things not to do. But our prayer and goal is to stir them up that they would desire these things. Few guys that I've met with recently, I've made a couple of new connections in the last month. And I've even said that to them. And I think their family's impression is that, again, I'm going to come and teach them how to live the Christian life or whatever it might be. Sometimes they're not believers. Sometimes they are by their profession. But I say to them, and I get criticized every so often because I'm not there to change people. You know what? I can't change people. Only the Lord can. And I do my best to share, to revive them of the things of the glory of the Lord. Some just turn from it. Not interested. I don't give up. I never tell anybody I'll never see him again, but a lot of guys drift by their own accord, or whatever it might be, that just aren't interested in what I'm helping or in their mind not helping with. But that's the thing we're trying to do. I drew a picture the other night, and I draw it often. And because a guy said, can you illustrate revival? Can you illustrate some of that in salvation terms? And I said, well, one of the drawings I often make, you know, I sort of draw a circle and put in there the orphanage. Remember when Jesus was talking to his disciples, he said, I'll not leave you as orphans. The actual word is used, but that's the picture. We are born away from God because of the sin of Adam. And what happens in a life, as God determines, he sends Jesus into that orphanage and said, I choose John. I choose Peggy. I choose Jeff. Invite them to come to the new place. And Jesus invites us. And hopefully, at some point in time, we say, I'll go. And we leave the orphanage. And we walk into the adopted home, the new home, the family of God. He never sends us back unless we go with Jesus to invite somebody else out of that orphanage into the new place. Once we take that walk, we're there. We're secure in that place. That's done. It's incumbent, it's important that the individuals who are already there share with that newcomer how to live in this new place. That's what discipleship is, mentoring. It's nothing new. But if they don't, they sometimes wonder, do I belong here? Is this really for me? I see all of them fitting in, but I don't. Again, speaking some of myself, but I see that so often. How do we approach that individual? That's kind of a whole nother message, if you will, how to go about those things. But not understanding maybe what's going on in their lives. Maybe just assuming now they're saved, now they've come over, just get on with it now. But we need to be involved in some level, depending on our abilities, our time, or whatever it might be. So we ask, as I do the mornings before I walk out the door, again, is Lord, help me today to know what you want me to say, what you want me to do. Do I get that right every day? No. It's not a surprise to you, I'm sure. But as the years pass, I can say to you, it's more getting more right. The pendulum is shifting. It's more right than it used to be. I think sometimes I look back at my life 10 years ago. I've been a Christian man for 25 years. So, you know, I look back 10 years ago and think, man, that was some silly stuff I did. Well, the reality is 10 years from now, I'll look back at today and think how silly I was. Yet today, I think I'm pretty good. So we have to understand that we are growing and there is need to continue growing. But we do the best we can with what we have at the time. Stirring revival in the hearts. In Genesis 2:7, it says this, God breathed into his nostrils, meaning Adam, the breath of life. He breathed into him life. He came alive, literally. We are born once. Jesus' encounter with Nicodemus sort of talked about that a little bit. We are born. God breathes life into us in our mother's womb. Then in John 20:22, it says, Jesus breathed life on them, the disciples, meaning them, and said to them, receive the Holy Spirit. You could say they got saved. They were indwelt with the Spirit that was promised. Now, we know it wasn't a promise to all who believe until Pentecost came, but the Lord gave his Spirit as he saw fit to those that needed it or those who he wanted to work through prior to Pentecost. So the Spirit was the same Spirit working the same way. I want you to pray today, if you need it, that God would breathe life into you to receive the Holy Spirit. It's what we call being saved. I don't know who God's calling. None of us really know. But if he is, you'll know it. I knew it, the people I know it when that occurs. But if you're a believer here today, I want you to breathe, pray for God to breathe his spirit into those around you. And that you might be part of that if God sees fit. We don't want to just point out all that's wrong in someone's life. They may or may not know it. Usually they're pretty well aware of it. We don't want to just say it's all good and nothing's wrong and let's just, you know, I'll be happy, because that's not the truth. But I know I need a great deal of the Lord's help to be an encourager, because by nature, I'm really not. I've shared here before with you that personalities won't get into all that. I would be a melancholy temperament. That's called the dark temperament. Wakes up with the glass half empty, usually. That's my day, still today. That's not going to change. The Lord does not change that. He changes how we deal with it. He changes what we do about it. He doesn't change our temperament. Somebody said, well, take it to the Lord. Not to be flip, but don't you think I do? What he's done is he's caused me with that temperament to very quickly run to him in the morning, lest I fall into a funk. And sometimes, sadly, I do, because I'm not as obedient as I would like to be. That old man, that old nature, can quickly take over, and we can't let it. We need to find the way to be revived for us personally. My way is probably different than others. Not expect everyone else to be revived the same way we are. There's other examples there. I won't get into them today for the sake of time, but some of the common things that people do to try to encourage people to see the hand of the Lord. I'll just share one with you. Again, let me just share one and then I'll finish up. I say this not to talk about me as much as to let others know. People say, go out into the woods and look at nature and take a hike. That's nothing to me. I don't have any enjoyment at all. I hate the woods. I say that camping, it's like, why would you camp when you can sleep in a bed? I don't understand that. I'm being a little silly here, but I really don't. There's no joy. I don't see the flowers and see the Peggy said, you see the flowers coming in. I wasn't looking for them. How could you not see them? I wasn't looking for them. They aren't something that shows the beauty of the Lord. I acknowledge it. And I recognize it. But it doesn't stir me. Go out and hike, you know, go out and on. So I don't. What helps me be revived is playing music. I love it. I wish I could do it more, but life doesn't afford that. Sitting with a person that doesn't want to live any longer. I don't say that happily. I say that sadly, but I come across that quite a bit in my day. Literally, don't want to live anymore. To give them a little bit of hope through the Lord to carry on another day, to make some measure of turn. That revives me. For you, it could be something totally different, and that's okay. So I want to encourage you to find that thing that revives you, but also the people around you, they might not be revived in the same way. So help stir up in them to seek what will revive them in the Lord. I want to close, the next couple of minutes with looking at the song Revival and think about the words we sang. And then we're going to close at the end of the service with the second half of that song. You'll be thinking about it more. But he says this, as sure as gold is precious and the honey sweet. What is valuable to you? You know, gold, take it or leave it. It's not something that I find to be particularly attractive. It was a sign of royalty, a sign of wealth. Still is to some level today. And the honey sweet, I don't really eat honey. So we need to think of our thing. What is it that's valuable and precious to us? What is it that stirs us? What is it that we want to have more of? So you love this city and you love these streets. Every child out playing by their own front door, every baby lying on the bedroom floor. Do you love your neighbor? Do you really care? When Tom, my Irish friend, used to preach here and elsewhere, he would say, do you have a burden for anyone? Is there some people group? Is there some individual one? Is there a group of people? Is there some area of people that your heart breaks when you see them struggle? Do you love your neighbor? Who is that? Could be one person. Could be your physical neighbors, people in church. Every dreamer dreaming in their dead-end job. People had said to me at sometimes, just do it as unto the Lord. You know, I think Colossians says, you know, that didn't work for me. I'm sorry to admit that. That wasn't enough. I actually changed jobs because I needed to. Just stick it out and trust the Lord in that. You know, sometimes you need to do that. But sometimes we need some wisdom to make some changes. If you're stuck in a dead-end job, maybe you need to move. Maybe you do just need to be settled in the Lord. I don't know, but we can't be blanket in that. Well, you just trust the Lord for that. Just take it to Him. You need to take it to Him, but we don't know what that'll look like. Every driver driving through the rush hour mob, that would be mine. I'm not a pleasant driver. The next person in the left lane on the beltway doing 50, I'm going to ram them because it's not for driving 50. You get in the middle lane. The left lane's for passing only. That's the law, actually. That's my own rule, too. I don't fly down the highway, but I drive all day. I want to move. Get out of my way. I know that's not totally right. That's where I need help. There's a middle ground there. They need to move, but I need to not, you know, so I don't ram them, actually, but that's what I want to do. The flesh in me wants to do that. I need help when I'm driving in the rush hour mob. I need revival. I feel it in my spirit and my bones. Do you sense the movement of the Lord? I hope you do at times in your own life. Pay attention to that. Send revival. Bring them all back home. Bring them where they're supposed to be, where they were intended to be. Have joy and peace in our hearts with the Lord, not always in stress. Doesn't mean we'll be without the stressors in the midst of the struggle. Revive me. Doesn't mean it has to go away. It may not. It may stay with us. But yet we can find joy in the midst of that. I can hear the thunder in the distance. I get excited. I was talking to a pastor of a church he took over recently, and I'm going to, you know, go there and share some things. And we were talking, and he's an uber extrovert. I'm an uber introvert. And he said, "Brother, I'm so excited. I'm so excited about these things we're going to do." And I said, "I am too. It just doesn't show it." And he laughed because he understood that. I'm not a very demonstrative guy. When I hear that thunder, though, my insides are stirring with excitement. It just sadly doesn't show. I'm trying to help it too, but that's not who I am, you know, so I'm trying to grow a bit. But the thunder doesn't mean you have to be out there flapping and waving and dancing. It just means that sense inside of security in the Lord. Not security of salvation. I think based on what we learn and all, we are secure in that. But the security He'll help us through the times we're dealing with. I can feel the brooding of your spirit, the sense of the Lord helping us or drawing someone else to Himself. That's excitement. That's revival. If we're not involved in any of that, it's no wonder maybe you don't have a strong revival. I'm not saying we all have to go evangelize. I don't do that. People say, "You go out and..." I don't. I just try to do my best to pay attention to the people God brings across my path. It's not loads of people. But it's enough to keep me busy. From the preacher preaching when the well is dry, the lost soul reaching for a higher high, different things, the young man working through his hopes and fears, not just getting over them, but working through them, to the widow walking through the veil of tears. We just want to encourage each other in the ways that God gives us to do. It's not devoid of correction and rebuke and all the things that we need to say at times. Most of the time when I encounter families, most of the time, not always, most of what the bystanders, the family members are doing, most of it, is just telling them what's wrong. And you know they're right, but they've heard it so many times and they know it. So oftentimes I try to encourage the family members. I said to a pastor recently, probably half my time is spent with family members of people addicted because that person really isn't interested. And they need help too. Encouragement, revival. I'm going to ask the musicians to come up. We're going to sing a song. Just an opportunity to sort of think about this. Think about revival in your hearts. Thinking about the Lord's part in that. And thinking about our part in that as well.